Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
It's rare to do a podcast in the comedy ends industry where any research has been done by the host. Normally it would be like, so were you were young, were you? Off you go then.
This week on Walking the Dog, Ray and I went for a stroll in East London's Victoria Park with fabulous comedian Rhys James. Rhys has been a familiar face on shows like Roast Battle, Mock the Week and Live at the Apollo, and he's also had a string of critically acclaimed live stand-up shows. Rhys doesn't have a dog, he has a cat whose name, Tabitha Lightsource, was gifted to her by Bob Mortimer. But I really think he developed a bit of an unlikely bromance with Ray, mainly because Ray is basically a cat trapped inside a very small dog's body. I really loved my walk with Rhys, and I hope you do too. And do listen, by the way, to the brilliantly funny comedy podcast he's written, Dial F for Football, which is set behind the scenes at a sports radio station. I absolutely loved it. I'm going to stop talking now and hand over to the man himself. Here's Rhys and Ray Ray.
Thank you. Shake that wetness off your face.
Can I say Rhys James was talking to my dog, not me? Come on, Raymond.
There's loads of examples of that on this podcast, actually, where it feels like it should be clarified that you're talking to the dog.
What do you think so far, Rhys?
Of the format?
Of the dog?
Of the dog? Well, what type of dog is that? I don't know anything about dogs and breeds and stuff like that. The type of dog I know is Andrex.
Labradors.
To me, that's default dog.
Yeah.
Don't you think? If you're picturing a dog, you're going, the basic, not basic, that's rude, but literally basic bitch. The most default dog, if I'm picking from if I'm on a video game and I'm a dog character, before I've personalised it, it's a Labrador. And therefore, that's the best one. No? Whereas what? This is a...
Raymond is an Imperial Shih Tzu.
Wow. Uh-oh.
It's all kicking off.
Should we mic up these dogs?
What's your dog called?
Arlo.
Arlo. Oh, I like Arlo. Let's go this
way. Raymond's got that sort of, baggy trousers vibe.
What do you mean?
Because the fur on his legs is so long. He walks do you remember at school, girls would have those trousers that really flared out and went sort of over their shoes onto the floor so you couldn't even tell they were wearing shoes, and they'd walk along. That's what Raymond looks like.
Like bell bottoms.
Yeah, that sort of thing. And they would just drag on the floor and then be soaking wet.
I mean, he is an odd looking dog, but I think you're quite in favour of the odd, Rhys James.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got a unique style. I like that.
We're in lovely Victoria Park in Hackney. And this is your manor, I'm assuming.
Yeah, vaguely. Oh, look at him go. He really goes in those bell bottoms.
I felt like you slightly reevaluated him when you saw him being a bit more athletic. So we're in this beautiful park, and I have to say, this is one of my faves you brought me to. Don't you think this park is lovely?
I do like a park with a pagoda. Emily, Raymond is being heckled by a lady. How do you feel about that?
What did the lady say? She said he's struggling.
She's slagging him off. She's saying he's struggling to keep up. I think I heard the word worm. I think she said he's a worm. No, she wouldn't say that. Come on.
So I am, of course, with the wonderful Rhys James. I adore this man. I think he's so brilliant. And
oh, come on. You'll cut that.
Well, you strike me, and I wondered how you'd react to that, because you are a brilliant comedian, you're hilarious, and also very liked, very well thought of, Rhys.
I genuinely don't agree with that.
Really?
Yeah. But, please prove me wrong, but I don't think that, I don't feel like that. Do you feel like that about yourself? I don't know, that's quite a hard thing to know about yourself, and I feel the opposite.
Why would you feel you wouldn't be liked?
Mm, I've got quite a extreme resting bitch face. And I think people, this is like way before I started doing this job, people always have thought I was being very judgmental and discerning and dismissive of them, which obviously doesn't make you that popular. My face makes it look like I think I'm above you, and then I haven't helped by my whole stage persona and act being that. That's sort of like confirmation bias then, that that's who I am. Really, obviously isn't. Or I would do nothing. I wouldn't be here.
So that's interesting. So do you think genuinely, though, that people get you wrong sometimes?
Genuinely, when people meet me after a show, like people who've come to see it, they can't believe I'm nice to speak to. I think that's the best way around to be, though. Rather than, I'm so nice on stage and then you're a prick. It's like, better off to be a prick on stage and people go, oh my God. People don't, I think in general, don't find me that approachable until they approach. And then I'm obviously a normal person, so it's fine. But I think people expect me to not be. How many wheeze is this guy going to do? Should clarify, talking about a dog there.
It's interesting you saying that, Reese. I think also you were very much viewed as, and still are, sort of young, cool comic. And I think sometimes there probably is an assumption that you might be the male equivalent of the Mean Girls.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, what a podcast for me to say, stop trying to make fetch happen. I mean, come on. We might as well throw sticks and I get to say the famous line from Mean Girls. This is perfect. Yeah, I'm not a young comedian anymore, which is, I'm just a comedian. I'm in my 30s. That's just comedian. You can't be young comedian. It's all relative, I suppose, but like, every now and then I gig with an 18-year-old. I don't know how to speak to these people. Their trousers are far too baggy.
Let us go back to Rhys James' early years. This was Harpenden,
yeah,
that you grew up in?
Sure, that's correct.
Why do you say sure like that? I feel like you don't like Harpenden.
No, it's just that it's rare to do a podcast in the comedy ent industry where any research has been done by the host. So I was surprised. Normally it would be like, so were you were young, were you? Off you go then.
So tell me what Harpenden's like.
Harpenden is a sort of posh little town that gave me the gift of being able to say constantly, actually, I went to state school, despite the fact that state schools are absolutely excellent. So the amount of times I've been accused on panel shows by other comedians of being a private schoolboy, and I get to say, excuse me, I'm from the streets. But those streets are Harpenden and Hertfordshire. So it doesn't really count, but still I get to, you know, really have my cake and eat it.
Is it sort of in the same way that Tony Blair's kid went to a state school, the Brompton Oratory or whatever? It's one of those, I know those. Or
I don't know,
Hospital.
Well, I don't know if it's quite as good as that. I mean, it still is, but the headline news of that school is like there once was a really big school-wide food fight, and it's like, and it was in the early days of things being, you could film things. I don't think even on a phone, I think someone had a little camera with them. And it was like on YouTube and went locally viral in the early YouTube days. And it like literally, teachers talked about it years later of how it knocked us down on the sort of school rankings locally for ages, because it was like, well, they can't keep control of the children. They're throwing beans. And so like, that's the sort of degree of violence and scandal you could come to expect.
So it was kind of almost like an old school grammar, one of those, like what would have been a grammar school.
Yeah, I don't know actually, because it wasn't actually, there was another one in the town that was like a bit more of a Catholic school that felt a bit more like that.
Yeah.
Then there was one that felt rough, but obviously definitely wasn't. And we were the middle one that was like, ah, yeah, this is clearly a good school, but it's not like completely up itself.
I like the one that felt rough. But we once saw a child with a slightly frayed blazer hem.
Yeah, exactly. Someone had at school when there would always be a kid who had a jumper that was just like slightly the wrong shade. Oh. Like it was still in the family of the school uniform, but it was just like, no, that's not the right grey. And you know it's not. It was like the whole school of them, basically. I once pitched to we got a new deputy headmaster from the Catholic school, came into our one to kind of sort things out. And he was really strict, called Mr. Pettingell. And he was like really strict, and he was obsessed with like top button being done up. There was a week in the school where everyone just decided to bite their top buttons off so that, as a protest, so that when he came around and said top button, you could go, don't have one, sir. Don't even have one. And then he would be like, right, well, detention. And everyone, oh, this has backfired massively. And there was once there was a queue. Everyone who didn't have a top button was sent to him to queue up, like Dominic Cummings on the trestle table.
In the Rose Garden.
yeah, exactly. We had to queue up, but rather than get to ask him, what the fuck are you talking about, testing your eyesight, we had to queue up and he would say, why don't you have a top button? You'd do some answer. Most people would bottle it in that moment and go, oh, so sorry, I don't know. And he would tell you about how it's a slippery slope. You know, day one, it's no top button. Day 10, it's a heroin addiction. So, you know, that was the sort of standards that were being implemented then. And he had come from, like, the posh school. And I once pitched to him the idea of, I said, I've got a uniform idea for you. You should do, like, vests, like sweater vests with the logo on. And he just went, oh, ghastly, and walked off. But at the time, Seth Cohen and the TV show The OC were huge, and he was making sweater vests very cool.
Should we go right or left? What's up there?
Let's go that way. Let's go right.
So, I was going to say the Jamesian family, but it wasn't the Jamesian family, was it?
It wasn't. It's...
Because you changed your name.
Changed my name. It's the Jones. My name is Jones. Bombshell. I think that information is widely available.
Talk me through the Jones family. Any animals in the Jones family?
Yeah. Grew up with a cat called Miggin, because apparently that's what my granddad used to call cats. She died the day... There was a year when my parents separated, and I thought, career in the arts, I've nailed it. Then a year later, they got back together, career in tatters, ruined. In that year, going on the mum holiday... So I think we'd been on the dad holiday. Going on the mum holiday, the morning we were going, that cat died. So that was quite sad. I would have been 15 maybe, 14, 15. Very sad, and then had to immediately go on holiday. And then, when I was 21, they got two new cats called Boston and Benoit Asuakoto, after the former Spurs left back. I named both of those cats, obviously. And I lived that house for like another year. I'd like just finished uni and then I lived there for 1 year.
Yeah.
So, you know, I raised those cats. And my bedroom in that house was like in the eaves. Do you know what I mean? Like in the roof. And so those cats would refuse to use the cat flap to come in, only to go out. And they would just at all hours just like come to the sort of in the eaves window. What's that type of window called? Anyway, they'd come to that window and they'd just like... meow so loudly at it, and then at one point one of them went missing for 2 weeks, so he ended up with a collar, and he would just smash the metal of his collar onto the window until I got up and let him in the window. They wanted to climb through the window.
He sounds like more of an Aguero type.
yeah exactly, he gets it done. He just keeps banging on the door until it goes in. Yeah, you're right.
Talk me through the Jones family members then. So we've got any siblings?
Brother, older brother.
Yes, that's exactly what I would have thought.
I think I probably give off the most little brother energy. I think my Twitter bio back in the Twitter days for a while was the nation's little brother. I was trying to really push the idea that the nation had heard of me.
Yeah.
In the end, I was just sort of my own brother's little brother. And even then, he's barely heard of me. But yeah, I've got a real little brother. I've got sort of little shit energy. Yeah. I think that's what it is.
What do your parents do? What did they do?
I don't know. Does anyone know the answer to that? Not my parents specifically, I mean their own parents. Does anyone really know?
Yeah.
Do they? Yeah. But that's when they have... Oh, my dad has a company that I presume deals drugs or something, or money launders. I don't know. It's like consultancy. But again, that's not just me,
financial,
could mean anything.
Financial?
Why not? Like a business consultancy thing, like sales, I guess. And...
Mum?
They met... doing that job at a different company. This is the story they claim. I think is a slightly over-romanticised revisionist history, that he, like, she was like on a different floor to him or something, and like some paperwork came down that had her signature on it, and he fell in love with the signature and was like, I have to meet the person with the signature. And then, I mean, this is bollocks, isn't it? Of course it's bollocks. But that's what they claim, that's their story.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I kind of love that.
Yeah, it's great, but at the same time, we're all going to end up with stories like that, whether or not that's the case.
What are their names, the parents?
Mike and Fran.
Oh, do you know I like Mike and Fran?
Oh, yeah?
I think I'd really like them.
Do you?
Yeah. I'll tell you why I think I'd like them. Because I think you seem quite a happy, well-adjusted person. And I think that's always a sign of good parenting.
It's called masking. I'm broody. I'm deep. I'm tortured.
Are you genuinely?
Oh, I don't know. I don't think so.
No, I don't think you are either.
But I don't know that I... If I were forced to describe myself, I don't think happy and well-adjusted would be either of the
really?
Terms. No. But just because I wouldn't describe myself as happy, I don't think that means I'm unhappy.
Happy was perhaps the wrong choice of word, because that's presumptuous about your inner state. I think what I would say is you have a nice energy.
Okay. Now we're talking.
How do you feel about compliments, Reese? A little uncomfortable with them, I sense.
I think I think I covet them and I want them at all times, but they just must not happen on air. Because there's no way I can respond that isn't... You know what I mean? How can you not come across as a piece of shit when someone says something nice about you? You don't want to do the annoying thing of going, no, not at all. That's the opposite, which is what I've done consistently throughout this. But you also don't want to go, thank you very much, yeah. Because the listeners will be like, oh, all right, he fancies himself a bit, doesn't he? So, you know, that's what I'm... If we were off air... and you said anything nice to or about me, I would just give you a wink, finger gun, and say, see you later.
So, are you
to clarify,
comfortable or uncomfortable with compliments? Do they make you uncomfortable?
Yeah, it depends what it is. Mm. If you were to say compliment something I was wearing, I would have absolutely no issue saying, thanks very much, because it doesn't feel directly about anything I've done. So that's fine.
So it's the personal you have an issue with?
Yeah, actually, if you were to even compliment any work I've done, I'd be like, oh, thanks. I'm glad you like it. But if it, yeah, personal, about, yeah, like that, I would be like...
I get it.
But I also do want everyone to think it and say it about me to other people. But if you say it to me is when I'll feel uncomfortable. But the idea that there's no one out there even saying I'm a great guy makes me feel even more uncomfortable. At all times, what I need is a series of people dotted around the country, nay, globe, saying, that Reece James, what a fantastic guy, and here's all these list of reasons why. And I just need to know that's happening, but not be present for it.
You're quite a complicated little cupcake, aren't you?
There's the new Twitter bio. Complicated little cupcake.
I think you're quite private, is what I would say. And I see you as someone who performs and... You know, sometimes you see people going on stage as comics and they're kind of bearing everything. They're kind of, I think Ricky Gervais says, living their lives like an open wound. You know?
Yeah.
You don't really do that, I don't think. I think I get the sense you have boundaries around the person you are on stage and perhaps who you are in real life. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, I'd say it's not necessarily as on purpose as it sounds. It's more like my goals on stage don't lead to the other thing, because I'm just trying to get as many laughs as possible and make it maximum funny. And I think the other thing, or in the past, I have felt like the other thing detracts from that. And so for ages, my style was like very, very quick, very jokey, and always led by funniest possible option. And so any moment of vulnerability or seeming emotion was just to lead to a tension break in a minute, to like ramp up or to change pace or something like that. Yeah. I sort of now don't agree with that, so that's what I thought for ages, and now when I watch shows like that, I'm less satisfied than when I watch shows that do the opposite. So I'm not really doing that much stand-up at the moment, because I sort of want to change my style a little bit, or just do something a bit different. I feel a bit like, in the past, if I watched someone who was really slow on stage and was pondering on stage and being like slow and then getting to an idea, it would really annoy me, because I'd be like, you're wasting time for yourself and the audience. And it's like, no, bang, 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 punchline, punchline, punchline. Now, if I watch someone doing the bang, 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 punchline, 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 I'm like, yeah, shut up, let it breathe. This is annoying. And that's what I've always done, is that one. But I'd rather watch the way John Kearns would do it than necessarily the... Also, I think part of it is I feel a bit like I've done that a lot. I've done seven different... hour-long shows of that, and I sort of feel like, well, now you've got to do something else. You can't just do that over and over again.
Which is, that's more that sort of mock the week
yeah.
style, I suppose, which some people say, I don't know what you feel about this, some people would say that's a more traditionally, talking about gender stereotypes here, obviously, you know, that's always associated with a more traditionally male type of comedy.
Yeah, I think there's so many male comics as well, though, that would be like, I can't do that, right. I hate doing that.
Yeah.
That's not to minimise your point. I just think, I don't know. Yeah, to be honest, I don't know. By the time I was on that show, because also everything you hear about that show from the past was, it's so combative and it's so mean and you can't get a word in. By the time I was on it, everyone, it was just like all my mates. And so you got on it. But before I did it, half the lineup had phoned me to give me advice the day before. To go, oh, it's a bit like this or whatever. And you go, well, everything I've heard about the show is, I'm going to crush you to death and you will never be able to speak. But you get there. Dara goes to like such lengths to make it welcoming for new people. I saw that when I first went on it, and towards the end when new people would come on it, he would be like having a sort of word with them to say, just so you know, this is how it works. If it looks like you're not getting a word in, just like give me a look and I'll sort of tee you up kind of thing. And that does sort of happen on every panel show these days, to be honest. But given that it's the one with the reputation of not having that. And also, yeah, it'd be like, you know, I'd be on with like Ed Gamble, and Rob Beckett phoned me the day before the first one and said like, and I got there, Gary Delaney was on, and he said, oh, I know you've done shows before, but here's the sort of quirks of this one that make it a bit different. So just, and everyone does that. And so then I obviously, it makes you feel like you should do that
yeah.
as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That it wasn't very combative. It was still sometimes hard to get a word in, but no more so than it is on anything where there's five comedians trying to say stuff about the same story.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
So, Reese, let's go back again to Harpenden.
Oh, must we?
Do you feel a bit like that?
No, I don't actually. Harpenden was, it sort of, the way I would describe it a few years ago was that it felt like it is made in Chelsea and everyone in it thinks they're in the only way as Essex. People would just like flocking to the Slug and Lettuce and talking like geezers. And it was like, no, it's Harpenden. You all went to these schools that were like, they're not private schools, as I say, I can't stress that enough. But your vibe is not this, you're Harpenden, you speak, stop dropping, you don't need to drop all these T's.
Yeah. Growing up with Mike and Fran.
Yeah.
And your brother is called?
Sam.
What's the energy like in the Jones household? Quite funny, I'm assuming.
Yeah.
Like, are you all...
Everyone's funny.
Really?
Everyone's pretty funny. Everyone is quite competitive, but not really about life things. More like, and wider family, quite games-led and then very competitive in that. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You're pretending to vomit. I assume pretending.
No, please, Mike and Fran.
We're not. When I say games-led, what I mean is like, at Christmas... Wait, what games are concerning you? Because I don't want you to think it's like, you're picturing Succession, boar on the floor. It's nothing like that. It's not that posh.
No, I'm picturing arguments over community chest.
Yeah.
In Monopoly. I just don't like any competitive games at all.
It would be that sort, it would be more like that sort of thing. So like, yeah. Or arguments, but also things like, everyone is a big exaggerator and speaks with such conviction. The dawn of the iPhone meant that everyone was just constantly being proven wrong. Everyone would just be like absolutely adamant about a fact, and then someone would just have looked it up in a second and going, no, it isn't. That would happen to everyone on a loop, basically. But everyone would just definitely say, this is the case, and someone would just be there going, well, here's the actual information.
Were you the noisy look at me show off in the family?
No, absolutely not. That was, my brother was more like that as a kid, I think. I don't really remember, but I am told I was extremely chilled, and I was like shy, really. Nothing would fill me with more dread as a kid than being like, come down and say hello. You know what I mean? That sort of thing. Come downstairs and say hello. And then a bunch of half-pissed 45-year-olds who I've met as a baby would then say things to me, and I have to be like, yep, and then leave. And that is also how I feel about adult life. That's how I feel about basically every social interaction, is that you're effectively coming down to say hello. You know that feeling when you're meeting up with a group, say, and they're all already in the pub, and you have to walk into the pub and you don't know exactly where they're sat, and then you have to sort of join it, and they've all got like half a pint, and then you've got to go and say hello, and then also be like, I'm going to go, does anyone want anything from the... And how that, you know how that's the worst feeling in the world? That's how I feel 100% of the time, basically. And so that's also how I was as a kid. I was just like sort of nervous and shy and scared of a lot of things.
So that's introversion,
yeah,
technically, isn't it?
Yeah.
You found it a bit overwhelming meeting large groups of people.
Yeah, big time.
Were you aware, Reese, that you had this sort of currency of comedy, that you were funny, and that when you were funny, what often happens is that kids think, oh, people laugh, that's good, that makes people happy when I do that. On a really primitive level, you realise that. I think I'm going to keep doing that.
A bit. I mean, I was tiny. I think that's the crucial thing. I was so small. Like, in every school year, there was, like, three or four boys who were, like, so small, and smaller than most of the girls as well. And then you just, like, by default, fancy all the girls who are smaller than you, because there's limited options, right? I also was, like, a huge introvert romantic. So, for example, you know, like you say, I wasn't, like, showing off and dancing around and saying, look at this, to my family. But I would be, like, you know, I've been off in my room or whatever, and then it'd be like, I've written this ode. I've just written this play. Or something like that. Or like, I've made this poem. And then my parents would be like, oh, right, this is... Well done. I thought you were just up there doing what you should be doing at your age. But it'd be like, no, I've prepared a little... And so, you know, once it came to things like, here are the six girls smaller than you at school, it was like, well, I'm not just like gonna try it on with any of them, because I'm also scared of that. I am gonna write them all. Not all of them, but I'm now going to absolutely obsess over at least one of them, or write countless romantic poems and stuff like that.
Oh, I think that's really sweet, Reese. I love that.
Is it sweet, or does it sort of push its way into slight stalker territory? Does it get a bit like, leave me alone? I don't know. It didn't become actually dodgy, but I sort of look back on it like, oh, God, take a hint, boy.
Hello. Is that a cockapoo? Cava or cocker? Cocker. What's the name? Woofie. What a brilliant name. I love Woofie.
They've both got pink collars.
Woofie's good, don't you think?
Yeah, not a long day at the naming office.
Bye-bye, Woofie. So you were saying, sorry, before we got interrupted by Woofie, being small, what sort of impact did that have on you? You were going to tell me.
Well, when in the thing of like, there's, let's say there's three small boys in the year, everyone just finds a different way to make that not an issue. So like one of my mates, Dave, was just like amazing at football despite being small. Yeah. So it's like, that's a great world where you can combat that. Others, I don't know, I can't really remember anyone else, but I think they just didn't. They were just little shits. So I just sort of was like, oh, I guess I'll try out sarcasm and stuff, like basic School of Comedy 101, and it sort of seemed to work, and a style developed from there. It wasn't really like a, oh, I've been funny, got a taste for it, and now I'm going to do that, and it makes people happy. It was more like, and also I think it's a bit lame to say it was like a survival thing, but it was just a, how can I make myself in any way appealing to anyone when I look like this? Oh, I'll be silly. So like, I remember being in, and this really goes against everything I stand for now, but there's a nightclub in St. Albans called Batchwood. And it's like on a big manor that's a big golf course. And in this manor, they have this nightclub, fucking hell. And on Tuesdays in half term, they did something called Baby Batchwood that was a nightclub for children. And it's like a proper nightclub, but you could get like a J2O and stuff like that. And everyone would go. You had to go, really, if you were kind of in the gang. You had to go. And it's where, like, you know, the taller boys would sort of get off with girls for the first time. I assume first time, my God. And, but I would also be on the dance floor. And I would be like, well, there's not, so I don't really have much of a chance here. So I would do like a silly, funny dance instead. And then everyone would be like, ha ha, this guy's great. We can get a little bit of comic relief from there, and then we can all go off over there to kiss. Not you, stay there doing your silly little dance, Reese. It was like, that was the sort of vibe. But it was like, well, I have nothing to offer here except doing a silly little dance. Mm. And I guess ultimately, isn't that what we're all doing?
But,
to clarify, I made a face there that was like it was a joke. God, please don't take that out of context and think I was being earnest.
Yes, I think you worry about being earnest, don't you?
Yeah, I can't stand it.
Why do you not like being earnest?
I don't know. It's not my job. Mm. And it's just, I find it uncomfortable, only in this forum. Yeah. In an actual conversation, I don't know. You know what I mean? If it was just like, I would be fine. Yeah, also I think, it's sort of what you were saying earlier, like, I don't overtly bare my soul in comedy, but just because I don't tell you I'm baring my soul, it doesn't mean it's not happening. And I'm also not saying, it's like jazz, listen to the jokes I'm not telling. I just mean, if you pay attention to what's going on here, there's like quite clear things happening that are that. It's just that it's a comedy show. So, you know, that's if you want to look for it. If you just want to come and have a laugh because you want some escapism, or, you know, you go, fucking hell, what a long day. I've got a babysitter now, and then I've got to go to Pizza Express and try and do that really quickly. And then we've got to go to the show and think, well, yeah, I'm not going to go there going, guys, me, my open wounds, like you say, and I'm bearing my soul. It's just like, shut the fuck up and say some jokes. So, but I also don't mind that style, but I don't feel comfortable doing it. So any soul bearing is happening underneath the sort of things I'm saying and are in the subtext.
Well, I believe comedy is truth. And so that's why whenever anyone says, oh, I was only joking.
yeah, right.
It's no defence, because what you're saying is, I was dressing it up as a joke in order to make it more palatable.
Yeah.
That's comedy, essentially,
isn't exactly.
It?
Well, that's also one of the reasons I've often been like, I was in the past not that on board with openly soul-bearing stuff, because I'm like, well, isn't it sort of show, don't tell? Why are you telling me that you're bearing your soul? I should know. It always wound me up when comedians would say, and I'm probably guilty of this, sort of thing, when they go, so I'm a bit of a nerd, and therefore six jokes about how I'm a nerd. And I'm like, no, the jokes should tell me that you're a nerd. It's also not for you to say or decide. I, as an audience member, decide if you're a nerd to me based on my interpretation of that. What's going on there?
What's my dog doing?
Wouldn't you
Reese?
Love to do that? Roll it, sort of like lying as flat as possible in the grass and blending in?
He's so happy.
Yeah.
Do you know, I don't think I've ever seen Ray this happy. He's, you're bringing out... It's because you're so youthful, Reese.
Completely flopped on the grass, showing off, tarting around, trotting away.
I've never seen him like this, Reese.
I'd give anything to feel like that for 1 second.
Do you think someone dropped a pill or something? We are in Hackney. They're very trendy around here. Something odd has happened
to him.
He's
trying to be cool, actually, for the demographic. You're getting... Yeah, you're good. Raymond's being laughed at.
I was just telling my friend, there are people openly laughing at my dog. He's so ridiculous.
They're so cute.
It's out of appreciation for him.
He is ridiculous. I do apologise.
Oh, you're being laughed at, Raymond.
Is this a Welsh? Oh, I love a corgi.
Yeah, have a lovely day.
Bye-bye, lovely to meet you.
Do you have a tennis ball that you throw for Raymond?
No.
He doesn't give me chase a tennis ball vibes.
No, he treats this more like a sort of Paris runway.
Yeah,
do you know what I mean?
He definitely got that. He's got those vibes.
When you were at school, I've always had this sense that you were what I call the stealthily studious. That it kind of wasn't your brand. Because the court jester can't be getting straight A's. Were you clever but didn't shout about it?
Well, it's sort of a bit of both. I guess I didn't shout about it academically that much, but I was a smart ass. It wasn't like I was completely not pretending to be.
Yeah.
Also changed. So in like up until the end of year 11, so 16, the people I was trying to emulate weren't shouting about it and were being a bit too cool for school. And I was acting like exactly like them.
Yeah.
I would get in loads of trouble for not fulfilling my potential. So like, what, Reese? Why did you get all C's in these mock exams when you're obviously too smart for that? And I would always say, well, I'll do it on the day. I was like, it's mock exams. Why would I waste time and energy? And I stand by this. And I still live my life by this, really. It's like, no, it will be sorted for the moment. But right now, I'm not going to do that. But then once I got to more like A-levels, the people I was trying to be like were in the year above me and were cool, but also were head boy and were like, you know what I mean, prefects, and they really took it seriously and they wanted to go to top universities and they got really good grades. So they were like sort of proud to be clever. So then I, you know, it just opened me up to go, oh, now you're copying some good people to copy and you're just trying to be like them and they can be clever. So now I can be outwardly clever. And then that's when I was just sort of like, oh, okay, fine. I can just like not hide the fact that I have revised.
You went to Manchester, didn't you?
Yeah.
And you did, was it like international relations?
Yeah. My attendance was maybe 0.5% at uni. Yeah. I didn't go to anything. But no. I was sort of back to where I'd been before, but I started doing comedy already, so I didn't care about... I spent the whole of the first year trying to convince my parents to let me drop out. Because I was just like, oh, I'm a comedian now. I've done a gig. So now I'm a professional comedian, which wasn't the case, obviously.
So you did a gig at... whilst you're at uni, had you done it before you went?
Yeah, about 6 months before I went, I did like 3 gigs in that time. And then I went to uni and was just like doing gigs while I was there. And I was just obsessed with that and I just only wanted to do that.
And what made you want to do it professionally? Was it Jack Whitehall who kind of inspired you, or was that later?
He got me to do it. So I wanted to do it for years, like from about 15. What an insufferable kid that would be. I'm going to be a comedian. And I was sort of like squirreling away. And in the same way before, I'd been writing little poems and stuff. I was just like writing little jokes. And then it was Jack Whitehall that he became famous. And then I was like, because every other comedian was 50 on TV. And so I was like, well, I'll do this eventually. But in the meantime, I'll become a consultant for my father's firm. I actually always assumed when I was a kid and like 10 years old, this is how, so I was definitely precocious. When I was 10 years old, in a very pretentious way, when you have like the careers chat, they'd be like, what do you want to be? And I do remember all my friends saying footballer and me saying, I'll probably just go into advertising. How bleak is that? God, I hate that kid.
No, I like that kid.
I'll probably just go into, I was very practical, very realistic. But I think because I was so realistic, when I was like, I'm going to be a comedian, that was still realistic to me.
Yes.
So it wasn't like... I don't think my parents, they wouldn't have discouraged it anyway because that wasn't their vibe, but they weren't, because I wasn't pie in the sky about things massively, they weren't like, oh, this is some weird, stupid pipe dream. They were just like, cool, great, go do that then. But when I was like, oh, maybe I'll do a gig, Jack Whitehall's famous, he started when he was 17, I'm 17 or something like that.
Yeah.
I can just, once again, I was just trying to copy someone. So I was like, I could just do exactly what he did, just like I'm doing with these boys I'm being like at school. And so I was like, oh, I'll just go. And he, on his website or something, his like comedy CV was there, and he'd done all these competitions and he'd won them all. So I was like, I'll go and just win all those competitions like he did. I entered those competitions. I did not win or place or often qualify beyond the first rounds, but that's just like early stage time is doing those.
It was interesting that you looked at him and thought, oh, okay, I can do this as a young person.
I've got to say, I do understand the irony in a sort of privileged chat that I'm looking at Jack Whitehall going, well, if he can do this, anyone can.
I really hope you loved part one of this week's Walking the Dog. If you want to hear the second part of our chat, it'll be out on Thursday. So whatever you do, don't miss it. And remember to subscribe so you can join us on our walks every week.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.